I actually give a whole talk about treating our work like an athletic event. And when you see it that way, it doesn't mean you don't have fun. And I mean, having a shift drink and hanging with the people you just did battle with should never be taken away.
But I mean, what's wrong with like calling that out a little bit? It almost feels like our industry is growing up a little bit. And I know it's easy to hold on to, like, it's easy to hold on to what was and to really glorify it. And I liked the school of hard knocks. I liked how hard life was. I felt like I was doing something not a lot of people could handle. But it doesn't mean it needs to be the norm. And I think that to have that stuff challenged, I don't think is that awful.
This collection of the greatest athletes in battle, traveling from one end of the United States to the other, is what big time is all about.
Shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Welcome to Hungry Food Pod, number one live digital audio industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner and award-winning chef, Chef Plum, and culinary veteran and star of the Food Saver commercial, Chef Jeff. So wrap, date, and rotate because the boys are about to set your mise en place. Here are the Good Brothers.
Woo! All right, it's Thursday night, and it's Plum Love Foods Live with your boy Jeffy, Chef Jeff, the Four King Chef in the house with the takeover. Well, not really the takeover, because I got Chef Dan, the Spice Man, my homie Dan in the house. Dan.
Woo!
Red hot. Red hot. Here we are. What? Nervous? Oh man, don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. Plum has taught us well. We're going to take the people on a journey through the best of 2021. And trust me, I know it was tough for a lot of people out there to think that what could be best in 2021. Well, you know what was best? Every Thursday night with your boys at Plum Love Foods Live with your boy Chef Plum, me, Four King Chef, Chef Jeff, Dan the Spice Man, Chef Dan the Spice Man, every Thursday, along with our good brothers Dave and occasionally a few other rascal scallions, Rob,
Frankie. Rob.
Yeah. Frankie, Rob, Chef Michelle, the folk, all the folk out there that we love. So anyway, here we are, Plum Love Foods Live Thursday, a best of, coming in strong. Strong like me and your boy Dan over here, pumping that iron. Rock hard.
Good lifting, right? You worked out today?
I did work out, man. I worked out today. I worked out yesterday. Today I didn't lift weights. Today I just did some yoga, did some stretching, and did a whole bunch of yard work, which is like, you know, that's fucking great on the shoulders and back. I know it's not like lifting weights, but when you're a fat ass, it's a good workout.
It all counts, man. You work, as long as you're on your feet working, it's all good, man. Doing something.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. That's what's important, man. Especially at our age. You got to get out there. You want to stay alive, you know.
Have to. Always handling it. You know, every day, the thing I like, it's funny because I found out with working out, it's a lot like food, you know. You kind of always learn something new every day, and I'm always trying to figure out new ways and techniques to kind of build muscle in different ways, you know. That's what it's all about.
That's it. Building muscles. Getting strong, strong like Plum. We're out here eating our Wheaties, doing what we got to do. Plum's out there closing down his busy-ass season. This Thursday, right now, the best of Plum Love Foods Live coming at you with our very first guest. Speaking is strong, coming in super strong with Dan Cardos. Chef Dan Cardos, Connecticut chef legend, hustler. Out there doing the goddamn thing. Dan.
Doing it big always.
Doing it huge. Doing it huge. Doing it huge. Or an oak. What's his other place? The Birdhouse.
The Birdhouse. So yeah. The Birdhouse, or an oak. Yeah, he's out in Stratford, Milford. He's Connecticut. He's doing it big. Yeah,
he's got like a food truck, right?
Yeah, he has a food truck. He does a ice cream with liquor in it off the food truck.
Dude, listen to my dude. You hear this guy? Plus, he's a chef's chef. And when I say that, I mean it like a brother, a good brother. This guy, when he becomes your friend, you're a chef, he's a chef, he respects your game. You ask him for a favor, and he's the kind of guy that's going to show up and not just hold you down, hold your whole kitchen down. A real dude, just like our boy Plum. Here it goes.
Episode 299, Chef Dan Cardo.
Guys, I'm drinking fucking bourbon out of a pint container like a true kitchen fucking
boss. That's a fucking G. Yeah. That's how a G does it.
That's real talk. I took a picture and everything, because just in case.
Yo, it's an amateur hour today. I left the bourbon in the kitchen.
Bro, I want to talk about like, some of these pictures, man. I mean, some of these sandwiches you got on your fucking Instagram are fire, dude. I'm looking right now at this corned beef Reuben meets a fried chicken sandwich. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, no, that's pretty dope. That went on the menu today. That's only at the Birdhouse, yeah.
Talk about what's on it. That looks awesome.
It's a slaw, just like a good basic coleslaw, you know. It's some spicy mayo and some B&B pickles and a piece of nicely fried chicken on a nice brioche bun with, you know, some really just good corned beef. And then we take some smoked Gruyere and just kind of brulee it. Real simple, really good.
It looks delicious, dude. So is this, this crispy chicken with apple and prosciutto. This looks awesome.
Yep, that was a good one too. We got a core menu, of course, of just like the chicken sandwiches that have been there, you know, that we know work, and then we put like one or two different ones on every couple weeks and take a couple off. So
yeah. I love that you change rotate. It. I love that you change it up. That's dope.
Yeah, I told myself I wouldn't. I was like, you know, I'm going to open like five of these. I'm not going to change it. That lasted like a week and a half.
Oh, shit, because you wouldn't have had something. You're like, oh, I got to make this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, delicious. Of course, dude. You know, you just get, you see something, you're like, oh, yeah, all right. And I can't make the thing 50 fucking sandwiches, so something has to go, you know?
Dude, so. I made a fucking, miso roasted cod for my client the other night, but I was looking at banh mi sandwiches all day before I went to work.
Oh, dude.
So I fucking made like a banh mi, like pickled veg to put on top of this miso roasted cod. It was so fucking delicious.
Yeah, dude.
It was fire. I was like, this is
that's
awesome.
Gotta be,
you know,
gotta be
crunchy, and the cod was it was awesome. Yeah, anyway, sorry, it's not about me. I was just you got my brain.
No, no, hey man, listen, that's why we're here,
dude. Let me tell you something. I love the idea of the ice cream. Like, I think ice cream is so underrated. People forget how delicious it can be. Here in Newtown, where I live, we have a creamery right down the street. They make phenomenal ice cream. The cows are right there. It's weird to eat ice cream and smell cow shit at the same time. For some reason, it works. I don't know. I ended up having twins because of it, but whatever.
It's very esoteric. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but that's what I'm talking about. That's the new sandwich coming this week at the shop. You got to go check it out.
Come get the esoteric.
The esoteric. That's right.
It's just another another forgotten culinary term. Don't worry, Jeff.
You know what esoteric.
I do know what esoteric is because I used to watch Alex Jones.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, shit.
For fuck's sake.
I'll slide that on you, motherfucker. Bam!
Yeah,
that's right. Don't tread on me, bitch.
Come on, man.
You heard.
You know where I live. That shit's not cool. dude, this ice cream looks killer, man. What made you want to go the ice cream route?
Well, my business partner, Pete, owns a restaurant right on the water in Stratford. And I was like, dude, I mean, what goes good with the beach and the beach and the water? I'm going through puberty, so don't mind my voice.
It's all good. We got you. You're going to get changes. Your buys will feel different.
So, you know, we kind of just, it lent itself to that. And that's what we did, man. And we do, I got two machines on there. So you can get two flavors from each machine and a twist, you know, from each machine as well. So we got one that's non-dairy and one that's dairy, and we just, you know, change the flavors all the time. But I quickly found you always have to have vanilla no matter what.
That's awesome. Everybody wants vanilla, don't they?
Have to, dude. Nobody wants it until you don't have it. And then there's a line 100 people long. Now vanilla, and they literally get in the car and, like, fucking speed out of the parking lot so hard that they fucking back into the trailer. You know, I mean, knock the license plate right off the fucking trailer. Pissed off. You know, Jesus Christ. So we always
have vanilla.
Yeah, you know, dude. They're like, nope. They're like, I judge an ice cream truck by the vanilla. You're like, no, the fuck you. Get the fuck out of here.
Get out of here. What are you talking about?
Yo, man. I have to be honest. Vanilla is the shit.
It is fire. It is fire. But there's
I hear that. Like, that's a good way to judge it. Like, I always like it. I don't even like chocolate ice cream, but if I see it on there, like vanilla chocolate, I always taste those two because I'm like, let's see what this motherfucker's about, you know?
Yep.
I guess that's the model.
Oh, this is chocolate milk. This is chocolate milk. This is a chocolate ice cream. You know, you get those, like, go ahead.
Jeff. Hold on. I got to chime in here for a minute, okay? As the guy I've been here, all right? I took my wife. Yep. I saw my man was doing his ice cream. I was like, yo, let me go check out this fucking ice cream. My wife's like, hell yeah, let's go. So we roll up. Yo, fucking hit that shit at sunset. Came through. He had, like, Bailey's in this vanilla ice cream. Like, he's hitting up these legit, delicious fucking ice creams, yeah, mixing alcohol in it. So I'm feeling good. I'm like, all right, got my wife out here. Yo, fucking Prince is playing in the background. I'm watching the sunset. Sailboats are going by. And the beautiful fucking Long Island Sound. This shit was incredible. Y'all talking about some fucking vanilla? Fuck the vanilla. Yo, that shit was fucking amazing, man. I'm telling you.
Yo. Because, dude, we got a liquor permit for the truck.
What?
I got and I also, obviously, you could sell booze to go. So it was a fucking perfect storm, dude. Wow. I was like, yo. So I take a little bottle of Maker's Mark. I take some cornbread. I take some bacon jam. I take some beloved vanilla, Jeff. And I take some fucking caramel. And I bang it all together. And, dude, it's fucking so good, dude. And we do Grand Marnier and orange sorbet and this, you know, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We change it all the time.
Where is the ice cream truck at now? Oh, we need to go there.
The ice cream truck, it's put away for now. Obviously, we're gonna pull it back out in a month or so.
All right, I'm gonna be there. My family fucking loves ice cream. My kids get drunk off of booze. It's awesome.
Obviously, we cater to the kids. No booze, you know.
Of course. I just want to find out if any of you other good brothers here, when Dan was telling the story about having the ice cream in the sunset and the booze, if anybody else felt like he was kind of hitting on us a little bit. That's okay. Hey, I just
100%.
Hey, listen. It's hard to tell two Dans. Monroe, let me ask you, man. You've had Chef Dan's food a lot. What do you think of it? What's some of the feedback you got from it?
Listen, every time I had family around, I took them to his restaurant. And everybody, and I have a picky-ass family. They're all pain in the ass. They're all funny about everything they want. But he literally had, like, the menu situated so well that there was a little bit of something for everybody. You know, it'd be like, he had that chicken sandwich on there, but he'd all have to also have like a local sausage with a broccoli rabe or something, so you have it as like a side plate. And I like that he had a lot of small dishes, which nice. Made sense for me because I could get a bunch of different things. And it was just like he changed the menu so often, it made it fun because I can't stand eating the same fucking thing every day. So it was good to have really good food, consistently good, but always changing. And I was like, that in itself is just blessed by the gods.
That's what's up. There you go.
Absolutely. That's a chef's dream.
I love all this stuff. I need to have this ice cream. I want to have these chicken sandwiches. I want that chicken sandwich Reuben bullshit. I want that. And that's how a chef orders food, by the way. Let me get that bullshit.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Let me get four of them. This stuff sounds amazing, dude. I'll tell you what, my last one for me before I get you out of here. The differences between running a food truck and running a brick and mortar. What can you tell me?
The food truck is really, shit, man. It's really like setting up a restaurant and opening up for the first time every fucking day, because you literally transport all the food there. I change the menu. I load it up. I bring everything there. I make everything for the first time because I don't test anything out. I make it right there for the first time on the truck, serve it for the first time to the customers right then and there.
Damn.
And so it's really like the way that I do it. There's people that don't ever change their menu. I literally change the menu every week. So yeah. Every single week, it's like we're opening up a restaurant for the first time. And shit goes wrong. And fucking, you know, you troubleshoot it right then, right there on the spot. And you figure it out. So it's a big undertaking, man. It really is.
Man, I always thought it sounded like a really good idea to do a food truck. But I always wondered if it's really hard to actually make a profit on it.
If you're on the truck working, they make a ton of money. If you're the kind of person that's like, hey, I got an idea, let's open up a food truck and just go count the money at the end of the day.
Right.
You're going to be in the hole every fucking day, man.
Gotcha.
You know, but again, back to the culinary school and culinary student thing, if you're a young entrepreneur or a young hardworking person that is really, really dedicated to your craft and about it, a food truck is the easiest way to get in there and be your own business owner, and you could absolutely make money on it 100%.
Damn.
But you have to be willing to do it. You got to be willing to work it, because you know what it costs to open a restaurant, and totally. You know to open a food truck is 1/10 of that. You know,
damn.
So
that's good advice right there. That's good advice, Jeffy. You got any last questions there for Chef before we get him out of here? It's getting late.
No, man. Dan's a good brother. I'm super happy we all got to hang out, man. I'm glad you're here.
No doubt about it, man. You got an open door. Anytime you want to come hang out with us and talk shit, you're more than welcome, brother. Seriously.
Guys, thank you so much for having me.
You're awesome. Chef Dan Cardos. Jeffy, where can people see the information, find out about the restaurants, and we got to get this ice cream truck thing going because I'm trying to get there.
Absolutely. Well, what's the name of the town it's in again? Tell me that.
Stratford
in Happening, Stratford, Connecticut. You're going to want to go to... What had to happen to my shit?
You're killing me.
I know I'm a hot mess, man, but you got to let me get through it. Orinoke Birdhouse, Orinoke_CT, and Chef Dan Cardos. I'm doing a point thing and like this like stance. I wish you could see me right now because it's like this like wrestling move.
It's dope when you do shit like that when we're on the radio.
That's why I'm telling you. That's why I'm explaining it to you so you can imagine it.
Yo, Dan, we appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. I look forward to chatting with you. I'm going to shoot you a DM here in a little while when we finish up the show, and we'll stay in touch, man. Seriously, I'm so happy for you. All success to you. I can't wait to see what you do next. I can't wait to get down there and try some ice cream. Next time my wife and I go out, we're going to fucking come down there and eat some food, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Guys, please. Yo, anytime. But, you know, just let me know I'm there.
Oh, you're awesome, brother. Hey, stay safe, and we'll talk to you on down the road, man, all right?
Likewise. Thank you so much.
All right, good. See you, brother. There he goes. Later. Chef Dan Cardos. Yeah. He's a legend.
Hell yeah.
There he goes. Woo-woo.
All right. That was awesome. He's inspiring. He's a chef. What did I tell you? This is the guy.
Every time I hear this dude, I talk to this guy. I got him on the show because I was at a brewery. He was doing food outside. I knew him a little bit from his restaurant. We came, we were talking, he was telling me his story, and I had to get him on the show. I told both of y'all, like, yo, we need to talk to this guy. He's a great dude. Yo, he does it big. He's not playing. Like, that he's a chef, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. Does it big. He's a chef. Salt of the earth kind of dude. Really love him. Can't wait to actually meet him in person. There's a lot of people I need to meet in person, man. Chef, you and Plum got to get me back up to Connecticut a little bit more now that this fucking COVID's coming. I mean, now we got Delta coming. I got to get boosted so I can get up there and fight it. But I still want to eat some good food. I want to hang out with some of these dudes, right?
Yeah, that's what it's all about, man. There's so many people meet on this show that, you know, you always get the opportunities to meet. But yeah, I did meet Dan. I met him at his restaurant. Let me throw him plugs out real quick. At Dan Cardos on Instagram. You got that. @Orinoke_CT is the restaurant. You got @Orinoke_Creamery is we doing some hyped up ice cream. And then at Orinoke Birdhouse. Check them out.
You heard it here on Plum Love Foods Live. Dan Cardos. Love that guy. Love you, brother. Thank you so much for being on our show. It was an honor to have you there. You're a great dude. Speaking of honors of having people on and people who do it big, our next person on the best of 2021, we would be remiss if we did not have on the Gotham Burger social club genius himself,
Mike Danger Puma.
That was a little more uneventful. We practiced that off air. I thought you were going to come right in with that.
Sorry. Hey, you know, I was so caught off guard by the idea of another burger in my face that I was just, hold on a minute. And then, you know, I had burger brain. That's what they got. That's what they call it now.
Burger, is that what that is?
Yeah,
I just say brain. Burger and you're like, duh.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen these burgers that they throw down there? I mean, we're going to hear about it in a minute, but the burgers are legit. They smash them. They got the onions. Put on a... Man, I'm so mad I haven't had one. American cheese. It looks solid. Potato bun.
Yes.
100%. Like, just
well, good news.
Little, like...
Good news is he's doing pop-ups all over. You can check him out. Where can you check this guy out?
Yeah, at Gotham Burger. Social Club is the IG, and you can find them all over there.
Yep, and GothamBurgerSocialClub.com, I believe, and you will see them at their next event if you want to. They're popping up all over New England, all over New York City. We love this guy. It all speaks for itself after here. Check it out. Gotham Burger Social Club on Best of Plum Love Foods Live.
I want to talk about what you just did down at Sobey. It's well known my thoughts on this festival here from the show. I'm not going to talk about that stuff. I'm talking about how proud I am to see a New York guy go down there and just fucking kick ass and crush it and destroy everybody, man. I love that. That makes me so happy. I'm so happy for you guys. So proud of you guys. It's just what a great time to make that happen. Talk about that festival a little bit and how that win was for you guys.
So, you know, it's intense. It was hot. We had a great team. You know, you just never know. You know, you don't know. You've got hometown favorites that are always, you know, people are going to vote for regardless. You know, they don't know the guy coming in from out of town. We were hearing great reviews. People were walking around the festival. We heard time and time again, you know, you're the best burger here. We tried a bunch of them. You're
how many
favorite.
Did you have to make at the festival? How many? But,
we did 1,000 total. Damn. So we did half burgers. So that was enough to feed for both sessions.
Wow. Now, people, this is, you know, chefs and industry people listen to this, so obviously the questions are going to, I'm seeing them already. Talk about, like, you know, the ingredients. Did you give them an ingredient list and they have the stuff ready for you at the festival? Did you have to bring your own? The logistics,
yeah.
Like, as far as that goes.
But even with the festival, you can give everybody all the list you need. There's always going to be things that don't show up. Luckily, our team put together some great stuff. We had the sliced onions ready, the American cheese. All the beef is provided from Schweig & Sons for that event.
Oh, great people.
Martin's potato buns. So all that was there. But, you know, you never know what type of equipment you're going to be dealing with. A lot of this stuff is rental stuff. And I brought my own smashers down so I knew that we can get the job done correctly. And we just had a great team. I mean, it wasn't just me that won that event. The guys from Pig Beach, people from my team. It took about 10 of us to win that event.
Yeah, but you pulled it off. And I'll tell you what, I'll bet drinks that night were off the fucking chain, weren't they?
They tasted a little better. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. Last year we participated in that event. The drinks were a little bit more salty and bitter. They were much, much sweeter that night. I'm not going to fucking lie. and we called our burger a tribute to, I don't know if you guys know, in Miami, you probably do, I'm sure, the Deuce, Max Club Deuce, one of the greatest dive bars in America. Down in South
Top
Beach.
10.
So, you know, as a collaboration, we're like, let's call this the Deuce, our burger. So sure enough, we went there and it was great. Told the bartender what we did and that we won. And we had this tribute burger for them. And I mean, first words out of her mouth, she's like, this round's on me.
There you go.
It was an awesome night.
Hey, before we get into the plugs and stuff, talk about what was on the winning burger. What was actually on the burger itself?
So you got your beef, onions cooked into it. Melted American cheese, or pickle. I use a hot and sweet pickle. And then I go very easy on the condiments. We use a little bit of mustard, a little bit of ketchup. And the final ingredient was Pig Beach's bacon jam.
This is amazing. Hey, boys, Jeffy, Dan, come on, give it up for the champ, huh? Give it up for the champs. There they are.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Hands up.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I will say one of the most underrated comments on a burger, in my opinion, is yellow mustard.
I agree with that.
I watched you in a video talking about that, and I think that's a really great point, man. And I want to talk about burger tips, you know, for people, especially grilling season's coming up, Memorial Day's happening. But before we do that, Dan, we got to let people know where they can find more information out about the Gotham Burger Social Club. This is and Mike himself. Mike is awesome. You got to check these guys out. Dan, where can we get more info?
If you don't know, now you know. Gotham Burger Social Club. Hitting it big, Mike Puma, Mike Danger Puma, just like the man representing. You can catch him on Gotham Burger Social Club on IG, Facebook, GothamBurgerSocialClub.com. Yo, just lighting shit up.
Listen, I want you to know Dan's our official nickname giver, and Mike Danger Puma is not a bad fucking name. Just throwing that out there.
I'll take it. That's I mean, marketing. You know, I've been asking people to call me Champ. you know, for the last couple of weeks, for the last week.
I like that. Hey, but
I'm getting used to that.
Let me throw this at you real quick. The champ, MDP. That's not bad.
There you go. Hey, I heard one of you guys there is just building out his barbecue in his backyard. One of the things I love, more people are switching over to the griddles than the old school grate grills.
Those flat top grills in the back, almost like a plancha. I forget what company makes. They make round ones that fit beautifully in the backyard kitchen. They're awesome.
Culinaire or something like that.
Yeah, you've seen them, right, Jeffy?
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're doing. Grill Mama has one.
Oh, those things look amazing.
The only problem with a lot of that stuff, you got to keep them dry. You got to keep them seasoned. Right. They will rust outside if they get wet.
Oh, yeah,
but they're real fun to work with. They make. You know, you get that Maillard reaction that you're not going to get from the grates, you know, on a Weber grill. I can't smash a burger on a grate, that's for sure.
Hey, our buddy of the show, Sam the Cooking Guy, Jeffy, that's what he uses all the time.
Yeah, I know. I have a big cast iron one that I can throw on top of my grill, but I have I use a Kalamazoo grill, and they have like these different grates with like. Almost flat. There's one grate that's like supposedly for like fish and vegetables, and I use it to smash a burger on every once in a while. I think you would love it, and you can put it right over hardwood that way. It's pretty wild.
Hey, coming in here on the Instagram from our boy Chef Dave. He's calling it the Art Flame. They also make one.
Oh, Art Flame. That's the one. That's the one I was talking about. The culinaire. Yeah. I thought it was called, but that's not. That's right. Art Flame.
Well, you know, I one of the things we always say in our burger group is nothing tastes better than memories. So that burger you grew up on is what you're going to love and what you're going to go towards. So I always say this, there's no wrong burger. I mean, what you like is what you like. You want to put ketchup on it, put ketchup. I don't recommend putting ketchup on an aged beef burger. But who the fuck am I to tell you how you should eat something?
That's my dude
give you
right
a recommendation,
there. This is what I'm talking
about. I'm not going to shame you into putting something on. I mean, I think there are a lot of ridiculous burgers out there. You're not going to see them grace my page. I'm not going to be eating them. But heck, if you want to eat it, so actually that brings me back to a great story I had in Louisville.
Let's do it.
At a place called the Dizzy Wiz. Somebody tells me about this old school burger joint. I got to go check it out. One morning I get up, I'm all hungover. I think it was the day I was going to be leaving. I'm like, all right, I got to go try this burger place. So I go over to the Dizzy Wiz, and it's in a primary. It's a black neighborhood, and I'm probably the only white guy in there. And
okay.
I order my burger, I order a bunch of stuff, and I'm doing my Instagram thing, taking pictures of my food. I'm going outside like an idiot, fucking trying to get that shot. And this really sweet old man looks at me and goes, boy, why are you taking pictures of your food? I kind of explain to him what I do, and I write about food and burgers and taking pictures to show, you know, other people, blah, 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 my experience. And he goes, well, I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to get a better burger than this one.
Damn.
And I'm like, you know what? Who the fuck am I to tell this guy this isn't the best burger he's ever had?
Right.
You know, and it was, you know, it was perfectly fine burger. It didn't blow me away. But it had that, you know, sense of community. And to him, that this was his favorite burger. He's probably been eating it his whole life. And I'm going to tell him, no, this isn't the best burger you got. Fuck me.
Right.
I'll be an asshole to do something like that. Hell no.
Mike, this is why you're a legend. Look at this. Your burgers you're the champion burger maker, clearly. Like, you already won the belt. You got a giant check and all the shit to prove it. But you're not shitting on anybody else's burger at the same time. This is what's fantastic. I cannot wait, Jeffy, for his heel turn when he stops being a babyface and he's like, fuck everybody else's burger. My burger's the shit. I can't wait for that turn. It's coming. It's coming.
I try and stay humble.
Listen.
Because somebody else is chasing me. I know somebody else is, they're out there. They're looking for the title.
They are. That's what makes us get better. Hey, listen, Mike, let's talk a couple of burger tips for people as we get closer to Memorial Day. Obviously, grilling season's firing up, man. I threw one out there today. I was on the horn with DJ Barbecue, Christian Stevenson. He's one of Jamie Oliver's close friends on our NPR show season. We'll have to get you guys on there, too. But we were talking about burgers and grilling, and I suggested to people, I said, something that you don't think about. When you're toasting off your bun, and I said, of course, you want to use those potato rolls. Those are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Put a thin layer of slather of thin mayo on top of there before you toast it. It makes a massive difference. It's so delicious. Put that little bit of mayo on that burger bun before you toast it. It'll change your life. It's better than putting butter on there.
100%. It's about a patty melt that's all buttery. You use mayo on the bun. I had that at a place out in Queens, Bellwether. They made a great patty melt, and I'm like, what? He's like, well, we slather it. We use a little bit of mayo on there. But, yeah, mayo is a hidden secret. You could actually put a little bit down and smash your burger on top of it. Gives it a nice fucking crust on the beef.
Really? Oh, shit. Didn't think about that. What a great idea.
If you're going to make a smash burger, put a little dollop of mayo on there, put the beef on top, smash it down into it. You're going to get a nice flavor and a nice crust.
I love this. I'm totally doing it.
I was doing that for a while, but it just gets too much when you're doing, you know, hundreds of burgers.
Yeah.
And you also don't want to fuck up people who have egg allergies.
I'm glad you
listen, they got egg allergies. They shouldn't be fucking eating burgers. That's how I look at it. I blame them. It's their fault. I've already turned heel. That's my problem. You're still a baby face. That's the whole thing.
Well, I make a special sauce, and I found out, you know, I put Worcestershire in it, and I found out Worcestershire is not okay for people with gluten allergies.
Well, they shouldn't be eating burgers then. We're trying to make umami bombs, all right? If you have a gluten allergy, like, I don't know, you're going to get me fired up here, Mike.
So going back to buns, very important component of the burger.
I love buns.
As important as the beef. You could have the greatest beef on the planet. Absolutely stellar. You have a bad bun, you ruined your burger. That burger sucks.
I agree. I'm a big fan, Mike, of putting that little piece of lettuce on the bottom of the bun so the burger doesn't... I mean, you want it to absorb some of those juices, but you don't want to get to the fact where it's like a sponge falling apart. So I put a little piece of lettuce on the bottom of the burger to help keep it from getting super soggy. Is that something you guys think about doing, or is that like a total terrible move?
It's, you know, it's if I had a restaurant in a controlled environment, I might do something like that. Doing what we do, it's one more step, and it's just too hard. There's too much going on.
Jeffy, we're throwing burger tips out there, man. I know you've made your fair share, and Dan, I'm coming to you next. How about a burger tip out there? What do you got for us, Jeff?
A burger tip? I think, classic burger tip. You know, get good meat and season it.
I also recommend seasoning the patty, not the beef. So, you know, you're not going to take the ground beef, throw a bunch of seasoning, and mix it in.
Yeah, season it.
That can really toughen the meat when it cooks. Form your patty, put it on the grill, then season it.
You know, absolutely. I think too many people also...
Don't like pepper on it. I just go salt.
I like black pepper at the end. Black pepper burns on a grill, so I finish it with black pepper. But with a burger...
you get a little bit bitter.
Up with that Lowry's.
Oh, come on. There go that man right there. There he is. That's what I'm looking for. There's Jeffy. There he is. Dan, what about you, man? How about a burger tip?
Well, every burger I have, I like to have a spicy element to it. Like, that's just me. I want to have some sort of either some kind of pepper. And I like to draw on a pepper that, you know, is like a ghost pepper or chili pepper. Even if I got to have a spicy cheese or something, that's just – I like that spice and the fat. Something about spice and fat to me just kind of sits real nice, especially if you get a little acid going to it. It's a whole other level of flavor.
You know, it's amazing on a smash burger. Fried pickled jalapenos.
Come on. Let's go. First of all, makes me super happy. Second of all, the fact that Dan said that me and Jeffy's old rap band name, Spice and Fat, that's who we were back in the 90s. Makes me so happy.
That's a nice topping on a burger. I'm not going to lie.
Oh my god, I'm so hungry now. I don't know about you, man.
Your burger brain.
Dude. Yo. Oh man, Jinx, that was hot. Yo, for real though, burger brain, this dude just put it on us. Just talking about his burger, talking about what he did, just hearing, you know, the story, right? I mean, this guy's love for burgers has taken him all over the place. He did it by kind of like how us at the podcast, right, Dan? Like a little bit, right? Like
DIY.
Like DIY, but it's like we just love us, right? Like we love our crew. That's why we all get together. Like Plum brought us all together, and now look at us. We're doing a podcast because Plum can't be here. He's letting us fill in some time, just talk our shit. And it's because we love it, right? Because we love this thing. We love and he loves burgers like that. And he just started getting together with his buddies, you know, and critiquing burgers and taking pictures, and look what it's grown to.
You know what I mean? It's beautiful. It's beautiful shit. I really loved it, man. Great story.
I love the story, the camaraderie that he brings to the table of just starting off as a group of guys hanging out, getting burgers, chilling, you know, grabbing beers, grabbing drinks, going to these restaurants, having these experiences together. And then when it comes to the point to where you're questioning whether or not you can bring the team together on a, I can't remember what he said, it's like once a month or every Thursday, or he has a whole, there's a whole breakdown of how they meet and when they meet or where they go. And but they're like, all right, we can't go to restaurants now because everything's closed down. We just gonna go ahead and start popping up our own. Like, that's, like, you just go, we gonna do this anyway. We're gonna make it happen. And then they ended up throwing out, you know, a award-winning burger. Like, that's insane. Like, this, and this is not a guy. This is not a chef. This is not a guy who's done it all. This is a guy that was like, I love burgers, and put what he knew about his love of burgers into a burger and made it this just world beater, like incredible burger, which it's unbelievable. And it goes to the idea of food and where it comes from, and that like inner desire to make this thing that makes people happy. Like, it's the joy that you get from making it. I can just, you see it in all the pictures on the Instagram.
Oh,
all the
joy, hell yeah, dude. You don't cook 500 burgers a day and not love that shit. You know what I mean? You gotta love it, right? You gotta be like, this is what I do now. I'm the burger dude. And he is the burger dude. He is the burger king. Gotham Burger Social Club. Mike Danger Puma. Another awesome gentleman. Another great dude. Super, super thankful to have him on the podcast too, right? I mean, what awesome guests we get to meet from just being on this show, right? We get to come on here and just be monkeys. And look at this shit. We get these guys. It's amazing.
Incredible. Like, to think that, I mean, honestly, it was kind of weird. And then it's funny, you don't know these, you don't know who you're going to have on, or, you know, you don't necessarily know that you can get this person. We try, you know, we try to put some stuff out there and see what happens. And then they end up being like such cool fucking people. Like, it's a perfect example is this guy. He was so laid back. He's having a good time. He's talking. He's bullshitting. He's not like hold anything back, and it's great when you have those kind of experiences with real people, and you're having, and they're, you follow that passion, that love, which is food, which we all revolve around food one way or the other.
Listen, man, I'm absolutely with you. Food one way or the other, and the other thing that I'm with you on is that what you just said, we have no idea how far we can get with this podcast. We just reach out to people sometimes. And our next guest for 2021, when Plum first said to me, Jeffy, got an idea. Listen for a second. I want to run something by you. Why don't you call NASA? I really want to talk to NASA. You know, they're doing all this space stuff, and this was not like once, honestly. This was maybe 4, 5, 6 times he was just telling me, oh man, we should really reach out to NASA. And then he finally called me and blatantly said, Jeffy, have you emailed NASA yet? And I said, no, because I was like, I kind of laughed, and he was like, oh, you really should. So I did. I emailed NASA. I Googled NASA and found a number, and I emailed them, and I told them what we did at Plum of Foods and who Chef Plum was and our interest in speaking to them, and they got back to us. And they were super down to talk to us, and they got us this awesome dude, Ryan Dowdy, who was like the food dude, like kitchen manager-y kind of front of the house guy. Who's in charge of like organizing like food scientists and astronauts and shit and getting together, and answered all our questions. And it was a really professional interview, right? I mean, it was like pretty wild.
There's a lot of great questions. That's all I gotta say.
Yo.
there was a lot of Plum, like, really showing his true childhood nature. Like, I mean, he was, you can hear him smiling through the whole episode, because this, like you said, he was serious. He was like, you know what? If you've ever talked to Plum on something about space, he gets really joyful. He gets this kind of like childlike pleasantry. It's like, you know, talking to kids about Santa. You see it in him. His spirit is lifted, and he's like, oh man, this is like so cool. So then during the whole interview, you get that whole where he's really thought about these things. He sat up at night, staring up at the moon, you know, just thinking about these things, thinking about, you know,
yo,
where food is going
as it goes
off into space. And it was incredible to just have this, see this conversation kind of playing out. And, I just think y'all going to love it.
Yo, for real. For real. You do hear the giddiness in Plum. And he asks a lot of awesome questions. Great questions. A lot of great questions were asked during the episode. Ryan Dowdy is an awesome gentleman. His accomplice, Shanika, she was in the background. She answered some questions. Also great, great questions that we had. It was awesome. I can't say enough awesome things about NASA and the fact that they got back to us and they answered all our great questions. And we talked to them for a while. And this is an excerpt of it, of a handful of the great questions that were asked. And we learned a little bit about Ryan Dowdy and about the space program and about astronauts. I hope you guys enjoy it.
And I think if you listen really closely, you'll hear alien contact. Just saying.
Yeah, maybe. I was pretty high.
Episode 304, Ryan Dowdy from NASA.
Astronaut ice cream, you know, the dehydrated block of Neapolitan-looking square, weird cardboard stuff, but somehow tastes like ice cream in your mouth. That's what I think of, but that's not at all what you guys are doing anymore, is it?
No, and that's a great question, Chef Plum. Actually, you know, all that freeze-dried ice cream, it's super popular at gift shops.
Yeah.
But when we look back at the history of human spaceflight, we've produced that years and years ago, but we actually never flew it. So all of this freeze-dried ice cream actually hasn't been set up. You know, and I will say with recent advances in rocketry, we're able to get more cold stowage space available in terms of upmass. And so when there is some cold stowage space available, we will try to send ice cream, but it's real ice cream.
Yeah. Thank God.
How long does it take to get to the space station? I need to know this. This is going to settle a quick debate. How long does it take for us? Like, say we want to hop a flight to the space station. How long does it take?
Ooh, that's a great question. So there's a few different trajectories is my understanding to get up there. So I'm no caveat. I'm no rocket scientist. I'm a food scientist.
Yeah,
totally.
But
totally.
It's probably going to take you anywhere from 24 to 48 hours to get to the ISS.
That's
depending on your trajectory and the vehicle that you're on. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I told you, Jeffy. It's in low space. Plum, in low
Plum
orbit.
Knew it. Plum thought it was like he said that. I was like, no, it takes a month. I thought like for sure, like a long time. I thought it was really far away. It's like it blows my mind.
Well, so Ryan, what are some of the food items that are going up? Like, what are some of the things that have gone up? I've seen, you know, I've watched some content with you. I've seen some of the things that happen. What is some of the? By the way, chiming in there is Shaniqua, who also works there. She's on the call listening in. She said it takes between 6 and 8 hours. So that's good to know. It is it's a cab ride, Jeffy. But Ryan, what are some of the dishes like we send up there?
Yeah, thanks. All right, good. I'm glad I caveated that with I'm not a rocket scientist. So she's much more knowledgeable about how long it takes to get there.
The most important part was both of you proved me correct. That's all that matters.
All right, good deal. Well, hey, the food we're most excited about is all of the fish and fruits and vegetables that we've been adding to the standard menu. So in the past few years, we've had some phenomenal food scientists develop new food products to add to the standard menu. And so we're talking about stuff like Indian fish curry, Turkish fish stew, honey ginger fish, fish with mango salsa, butternut squash, Brussels sprouts. So the butternut squash and Brussels sprouts and our braised red cabbage, these are phenomenal new products, and they've got texture and flavor and color. And this is really different than the types of space food that we've sent in the past. What we've seen is that when astronauts like the food, like the way it tastes, then they get the nutrition that's in the food. So the food's got to be delicious first and foremost, because if people aren't eating it, they're not going to be getting the nutrition they need. And so space can be a very stressful environment and can be really harsh on the human body. And that's why you got to feed astronauts really well with a diet that's higher in fish and fruits and vegetables to make sure astronauts are getting the nutrients they need.
is the lack of nutrients from this, obviously you're talking about the environment, the lack of gravity and just the lack of being able to move your muscles to process the nutrients inside the food?
You know, it's definitely really tough on the human body surviving in space that they can maintain their bone density and their muscle mass.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, you go into microgravity and suddenly your muscles don't have to work so hard to, you know, to hold yourself upright and your body's not having to do all the exercise that it had to do to walk around in Earth gravity.
Right.
So, you know, what you find is that astronauts are having to exercise up to 2 hours every day. And then that is, it really increases their caloric requirements. And so they've got to eat a lot of food and it's got to taste good. Otherwise, they won't get the nutrients they need.
I mean, it's just like working in a restaurant. If you don't make great food, no one's going to eat it. It's just going to sit there and no one's going to make, you know, it's just not going to eat it at all. It makes total sense. So I got to imagine there's a lot of, you know, hurdles to accomplish when it comes to this, aside from the most important one being have the astronauts like the food, but as well as like, I mean, things like shelf stability, things like, you know, maintaining the actual integrity of the food. What are some of the hurdles that are kind of the biggest things you have to think about when you're making these meals?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's something that, you know, not a lot of folks outside of the culinary and food science world think about is that on the ISS, because we don't have huge refrigerators and freezers, you know, we just don't have the electricity and the hardware for that. The ISS food system, for the most part, is shelf stable. So all of this food has a shelf stabilization method applied to it so that it can sit safely at room temperature without spoiling. So we freeze dry a lot of our vegetables. We thermostabilize, you might call it canning. We thermostabilize our foods that do better with thermostabilization than freeze drying.
And then, of course, we'll send out intermediate moisture
products.
The rest assured.
There you go.
From here on out, that, no more canned food. It's thermal stabilized.
Yeah, because it is because – you know, technically, that's technically the correct nomenclature because canning is really putting food in a can. And so we put food into pouches, plastic pouches that look more like an MRE style pouch. You know, they're flexible, they're lightweight. It's much better for spaceflight than a can. So it's not really canning. It's really thermostabilization. You're applying heat to kill all the bacteria that would spoil the food or make humans sick. So really the biggest thing in terms of food for the International Space Station is that you really need a team of food scientists working together who know how to turn food products into a space food product, into something that can be shelf stable. Yeah. And so that's one of the biggest surprises I think that people have about the ISS food system. I was given a tour to a group of kids in the food lab one time, and one of them raises their hand and says, "Why don't you just send a burrito to space?" I said, "That's a great question." You know, and the answer is, well, you can't leave a burrito out on your counter for months on end and then expect people to be able to eat it. You get food poisoning. You get really sick.
Sure.
And so with the food that we send to the ISS, we need food that can last 2.5 years. And that's a really long time. So shelf stability is super important for the ISS.
You know, and I want to talk more about that, but I have a dumb question for you, Ryan. All right. And you can make fun of me for this question and please feel free to, and because trust me, Jeff will as well. So I think about when it's really cold outside of my house, if I take a 6-pack of beer or something and just leave it outside to stay cold,
great question.
It's fine. Right. So what if we vacuum seal food? So you eliminate the oxygen in there. I mean, kind of the same idea. Couldn't you leave it on the front porch of the space station and it just kind of holds?
Oh, great question. Like, could you freeze it? Could you like expose it to the vacuum of space and correct. Stabilize yeah. it that way? Is that your
so,
question?
Right. So if we vacuum seal, so we've removed the air and the oxygen from the package, right? And it's frozen already or it can be frozen. Couldn't we essentially leave it outside?
Jeff, that's a super important question. And you know, that's one of the things that NASA has looked into is for long range missions like the Mars mission, for example,
yeah.
is there any possibility of putting the food on the outside of the vehicle? And, you know, the answer is it might work, but it'd probably be really tricky. And here's the reason why. First of all, let's talk about pulling a vacuum. So on your packages of freeze-dried food, you actually don't want to pull a complete vacuum. If you do, it will crush your food product, which is kind of a foam. You know, after all the water is removed,
yeah.
You know, remember when you ate that freeze-dried ice cream, it's got kind of a foamy texture, right?
Right.
And so if you pull a complete vacuum on that package that the freeze-dried ice cream is in, it'll actually crush the food. And so then when the food gets to the ISS, astronauts can't just rehydrate it with water.
I guess we're having the technical difficulties there. So sorry about that, man. I'm not sure if that's us or you or NASA, or maybe the aliens don't want you to tell us what's in the food. I don't know.
Yeah, this is what happens when you're telling like government freeze-dried mac and cheese secrets.
Exactly.
So with the, you know, and that's a great question. You know, it'd be great if we could send food in the vacuum of space. But again, with the freeze-dried foods, if you pull a complete vacuum on them, it'll crush the food so that you can't rehydrate it. And then for the thermostabilized food products that come in the MRE-style pouches, if you freeze and thaw that by exposing it to the vacuum of space, it's going to turn into mush too. And so you'll have texture degradation. And, you know, if there's one thing that people love in terms of space food, you really need good texture. So we'd love to do it, but, you know, that's why we send food inside the rocket in an environmentally controlled scenario. And it's to make sure that that space food, which is certified as class one spaceflight hardware. So we certify food as class one government furnished spaceflight hardware. It goes through all the safety checks. So it technically is spaceflight hardware, but it's food at the same time.
Wow. So it's classified as hardware.
Yeah, it sure is. And that's something I think that, you know, is interesting when we try to talk to other people about, you know, the process. Because we definitely have a different process than what you would find in a restaurant on Earth. Instead of starting with a recipe, we start with what we call a food specification. And so the food specification is a signed NASA document that's got end-to-end procedures and quality control for manufacturing space food as spaceflight hardware. And it ensures that if all these rules are followed, then what results is a safe, nutritious, delicious food for the astronauts on the ISS.
Now, who actually prepares the food? Is there like the NASA cooks who make this food?
Absolutely. We've got a phenomenal team of food technicians and some culinary trained chefs that work to prepare our food at Johnson Space Center. And then we will freeze dry it or thermostabilize it. We'll keep it in controlled storage, and then we'll stow it into a food container and get it out the door to send it to the ISS.
So you mean to tell me with my degree from CIA, I could have worked for NASA?
Absolutely. Damn. Hey, would you be willing to make freeze-dried mac and cheese for us?
I would absolutely do that. Are you kidding me? That sounds amazing. We'd make it truffle and put bacon in it. It'd be so good.
He makes a crazy frittata.
Hey, so Ryan, when we talk about shelf stability a little bit, and as far as just looking long term with all the talk of Mars these days and things going on and planning to put people there sooner than later, hopefully, I got to imagine the shelf stability is even longer for a trip to Mars. What kind of timeline would that be? Like, how long does the food have to stay? Because it's not like a grocery store on Mars where they can stop in the, you know, halfway there and go to 7-Eleven.
Chef, that's exactly right. So Mars is going to be even harder. For the ISS, we're looking for shelf life of around 2.5 years for shelf-stable foods. And for Mars and beyond, we're looking at things that have a shelf life of 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
So the tricky thing is that the technology to produce spaceflight food hardware that lasts that long currently doesn't exist. Yeah, so we're working to develop that. And Grace Douglas is the lead scientist for advanced food technology here at Johnson Space Center. And it's her team that's working on these long-term shelf stability processes so that we can make sure this food you know, when it gets out to 3 to 5 year time frame, it still looks good and tastes good and has all of the vitamins and minerals the crew members need. Yeah, and so the longer time frame is actually because you can't ship food on the same vehicle as the crew that's going to be going to Mars. You've got to pre-position it a year or more in advance.
Wow.
Because you've got to send so much food for that mission, you have to launch it on a separate vehicle because of how heavy it is. One or more vehicles.
Exactly my next question, just talking about the weight of these things and how much it weighs to get food, you know, to somewhere. I mean, it's got to be a massive part of the weight restrictions, I guess, on whatever vehicle we're using to get there. You know, I just think about, you know, even the food, but not even that, just water, like things to drink. I mean, that's heavy.
Yeah, it sure is. That's a great question about the beverages. So we don't send up any hydrated beverages. All of our beverages are rehydratable powders. And then what the astronauts do is they use the water that's already on station and that's being recycled. Okay. They use that to refill the beverage.
Man, that's so crazy.
So that's one of the ways that we reduce mass as much as possible is we don't send any hydrated beverages.
So interesting, man, to see how that would happen.
Powdered water?
That's where I was going to go. We have a great company that advertises with us. It's a joke commercial, Ryan, for a company called Powdered Water. And obviously, you're working in the industry, you know that chefs tend to make a lot of bad jokes. And powdered water is one of them. But I had a question. Could we make powdered water for real? Could it be a powder of water? You know, we break it down to a solid, but when it goes in your mouth, the molecules like double from the moisture in your mouth, so it like triples the amount of water.
You know, that's a fascinating scientific question, and you know, I just have a hunch that if you dehydrate water, if you put water in a freeze dryer, then I think what you're going to be left with is nothing at the end there. So, dehydrated water or powdered water, you know, you can definitely send that to the ISS. It's called an empty drinking water container. And then perfect. The astronauts just refill it with water once it gets to station.
All right. You make fun of us now, Ryan. We're working on it. Trust me. You just wait. NASA's going to be buying powdered water from us here very soon.
It sounds like a brilliant idea. If you can get it to work, let me know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So when you guys are planning all these awesome menus and stuff like that, are you ever like, given foods from like large companies to like sponsor the space trip, like the Tyson chicken, like be like, hey, here's a, you know, a ton of chicken from our factory for you guys to use to take to space or something like that? Or do you guys work with farms? Like, how does that work?
You know, Jeff, that's one of the trickiest parts. You know, working for the government, we can't endorse specific companies, right? And so our foods, we're really not able to call out the brand names for them. And so think that's one of the things that, you know, companies are looking for is how can we make this beneficial for us?
Sure.
So honestly, what we do at NASA is really much smaller than what's done by other huge food manufacturing companies in the United States. You know, NASA is really trying to feed 4 people every day really well and really safely. Just 4 people every day. And so this is totally different than, you know, when we make freeze-dried mac and cheese, for example, we'll make like 250 to 300 servings at a time, and that'll last us for a year, right?
Awesome.
And so we have super high quality control, but low volume production. So that's the trade that we're making. And that's not really a good value proposition for a large company. So we work with outside companies whenever we can. We're definitely reliant on the kindness of everyone in the food industry to work with us on our small production sizes. But it's definitely difficult because it's a hard sell when you're not producing, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds of product X and you're not able to endorse. So we do the best we can. And, you know, I'm happy to say that we're able to, you know, procure ingredients when we need them and keep the astronauts happy and healthy.
So you're saying Tang and Ovaltine is a lie. That's so, a lie. I grew up thinking I was eating what astronauts ate, and the whole time it was just a marketing ploy.
So
come clean. So
you know, I'll be honest. I actually can't. I can't talk about those specific. I can't talk about those. But I can say that for those two products, for example, I can't deny that we don't use them. So we'll put it awesome. That way.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Brian, you're a legend, man. We can't thank you enough for your time. Thank you so much for joining
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
Honestly.
Thank you all so much. This has really been a lot of fun today.
Hey, give it up. Ryan Dowdy, he is the food Woo! System manager from NASA. Thank you, Ryan. You're the man. We appreciate
Thank you
time.
So much.
Yeah. Ryan Dowdy at NASA. You don't know where NASA's at. Dan, give him some plugs. Where's NASA?
Yo, NASA is, first of all, in space, not a hidden Mars, but Cape Canaveral, Texas, Houston, Texas. Catch him on our Instagram at NASA.
It's Houston, Ryan Texas.
Dowdy. We're I'm not even sure if it's his real name. There was a lot of, you know, things going on, but, you know, NASA's NASA. They're doing big things. They're going to space.
Dude, going to space. But that was actually super cool. The stuff that they told us and the stuff that we learned, the great questions that were asked, the final question that Plum asked there about being able to put his cold beer in space, and the fact that he didn't get laughed off. I was for sure thought this is like a scientist, he's not going to be into answering this, and he, like, you know, took that shit right on the chin, right? Like actually, Plum, that's a great question.
Oh, it sounded like they've already had the conversation about how to do it.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, you know, on the long distance trip to Mars, we were thinking about how do we store food outside, keep it cold. That's a great idea. It's a great question. We're thinking about it. We're working on it. It was pretty wild, man. It was pretty wild, dude.
I think it seemed genuine too. It wasn't like a bullshit kind of. He definitely has things he can and can't say, but it was a very genuine to what they are. You know, it wasn't like some kind of like guy. He definitely loves what he does. He got into it, so it's kind of strange. You think, oh, NASA's going to be this real uptight guy, and he had his moments where he was really like, you could see that he invested a lot of his heart into this kind of idea of how they're doing things.
Absolutely, brother. I don't mean to play it down at all. If I was, he is a absolute professional, and he loves his job. You can tell he loves doing what he does, like the coordinating of it. Like when he was talking about the products that they were coming up with, and, like, you know, being super proud of, like, the red cabbage and the color and the textures that were sent to the astronauts, and just how important the astronaut food is also to the astronauts. These guys are super far away from home, and the power of food there, right? Like, reinforcing the power of food, which was, like, Plum talks about it constantly. Like, since the beginning of the show, it's, like, one of the reasons he even does this show is because he's a chef, and because of food, here we are, Plum Love Foods Live, best of, talking about fucking NASA now, right? Absolutely. And the power of food, and how good food comforts astronauts when they're away from home. Bro, I'm telling you, that's pretty crazy, man. It's pretty crazy.
How they set up a meal for them, like they all get to pick their own meal, and you hope that, you know, while they're up there, however many thousand miles away from home, they're thinking about, you know, thinking about that home.
Yo. It's actually not that far away, though, right? I mean, he said that. It's like 6 hours or something. They're like, it's actually 6 hours if you catch the right wind and, like, you know, the Earth is turning at the right speed or some shit at the right time. I don't know. So I was beyond my pay grade. I zoned out. But it was definitely, he was talking about something. I heard 6 hours, and I was like, oh, my God, Plum's right. And he was like, see, I told you, because he did tell me that. And it's like you said, this motherfucker knows things about space because he reads it all day. He's like a kid. He gets, like, popular science. He's in the toilet reading the popular science magazine, excited about the propulsion.
Rockets and why the moon.
His dog's name is Rocket. Oh, it makes total sense.
Oh,
space cadet. It's my, yeah, we love Plum. Plummy, we miss you tonight. Chef Plum, Plum Love Foods Live. Here we are again because we're coming back stronger than ever. We're going to have a new season planned up for you this fall. The end of our summer season's coming to a crashing end here. In the Hamptons, out in Connecticut, and everywhere. Back to the school grind. Kids are going back to school. Things are coming back together. Summer's coming to an end. But it's all right, because we'll be here every Thursday night on Plum Love Foods Live. Woo!
Hell yeah. We doing it big.
We doing it big. All right, guys. So how's it go, Dan? What is it? Remember, kids.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, it was a great episode. Thank y'all. And then on the outro point, in the meantime and in between time, remember, food is one of the most important things in life, and everything important revolves around food.
So put some respect on it.
Boom!
Boom! Love you guys. Peace.
I'm the tower of power, too sweet to be sour. I'm funky like a monkey. Sky's the limit and space is the place.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.